This is Phil Burke. I'm the chief architect of JBoss Inc. I do most of the development on our aspect-oriented framework and our aspect library. I'm also involved with the ETB3 expert group and a few other things at JBoss as well. What I'm going to talk about today is I'll briefly go over what AOP is. How many people here have went to Ram Navas's session this morning, this week? A couple. Not all of you. Okay. So maybe going over AOP is what AOP is such a bad idea. When I talk about what AOP is, I'll describe it sort of in examples from JBoss's aspect-oriented framework. That should be like a third of the presentation. Then the next two thirds, we'll talk about some of the prepackaged middleware that we've written with JBoss 4 that you can use in your programs, and hopefully that will give you a pretty good idea of how you can apply aspect-oriented programming to middleware by seeing some of the aspects that we've actually written. Then at the end, if we have time, I'll do a demo of one of our more popular aspects, JBoss Cache. So what is AOP? I'll try to touch on it briefly, and I really think an example really shows you what aspect-oriented programming really is. But really, the popular really academic definition is that it's a modular way of defining and applying cross-cutting concerns. A cross-cutting concern in aspect-oriented programming is really code that looks like it has structure, but really can't be described using object-oriented techniques. It can't be applied to it can't be described in a method or a class. It's functionality that's not really specific to any particular class, but it can be found in many different classes and many different class hierarchies. AOP can be a way of modularizing and layering your code, like an onion. So you can layer your code using AOP. Really, it can be turning any point in the Java language into an event. So you can think of Java as a bunch of events. An event being a method call, a constructor call, a field access, exception being thrown. AOP allows you to think of these things as events and apply event handlers to any points in a Java program. AOP provides sort of like a query language for these events. So you can say, when this method is called within this class, I want to trigger an event, and this event will do something. It's basically in a nutshell what it is. What AOP is not. AOP is not object-oriented programming. It's not the same thing. It's not better than object-oriented programming. It's really a complement. Many of the aspect-oriented academics say, object-oriented programming is useful for solving 80% of problems. Aspect-oriented programming solves the 20% that object-oriented programming isn't good at. So AOP is not a replacement. Don't think of it as a replacement. Think of it as something to complement the designs of your program. So let's dive into an example, because example really nails down what aspect-oriented programming is. Here we have a really, really simple piece of code here. We have a bank account class, and we have a withdrawal method. There's really two parts of this withdrawal method. We have the main code that goes to a data source and withdraws the amount from the database and synchronizes with the database and such things like that. Another part of the method is we're actually timing the method to see how long it took. So we have some metrics functionality here. So the code in red is the metrics. So you see at the beginning of the method, we get the start time. At the end of the method, we calculate the total time taken and we print it out. Code in red is the aspect of this particular example. what's bad about coding? What's bad about this metrics code in this particular example? What's bad about it is it's difficult to turn metrics on and off. If you wanted to apply metrics throughout your code, you would have to open up multiple source files and add the metrics, this verbose metrics code everywhere in your code base. So your code base becomes bloated and harder to read. Really, metrics doesn't really belong in your code base. Another thing that's wrong about this particular code right here is that if you want to expand a metrics functionality, let's say you wanted to actually log these metrics to a little table and graph those results later on offline or something, it would be hard to add this sort of functionality to your code base because again you would have to open up a bunch of source files and have them. So where does aspect-oriented programming come in? Aspect-oriented programming for this particular example allows you to encapsulate the metrics functionality in one place, in one data structure, in one class, and then gives you a query language so you can specify where you want the metrics code to be executed. That's what AOP provides. Provide you a way to encapsulate code like this and provide a query language so you can specify where you want certain event triggers to happen. So once you've written in aspects, the metrics can be removed from your application code. The metrics aspect can be applied wherever you want in your code base. And again, it gives metrics a code structure so that you can extend and grow that particular functionality. So let's quickly go through this example on how you could implement this in the JBoss's aspect-oriented framework. But before we do that, let's define a couple terms. First term is an advice. An advice in AOP is sort of like an event handler. It's the behavior you want to weave into your Java classes that run. For this example, again, it's the metrics timing code. It's the profiling code. An aspect is a collection of advices. In JBoss AOP, it's an actual class that contains a bunch of methods. A point cut expression language is AOP's query language in JBoss AOP. It specifies any point in your Java code, specifically a method execution, constructor execution, a field access, those sort of things can be defined within a point cut language. An invocation is an encapsulation of this event at runtime. So when you're running an aspect, you would get access to an invocation object, and this invocation object would have information about what event you are intercepting. So you could get information like what method is being called, what constructor is being called, that sort of stuff. Building an aspect, building this metrics aspect in JBoss AOP. So to build a metrics aspect, what we would do is we would define a class, a plain Java class. We would define a method that would encapsulate our metrics functionality. So again, our metrics functionality is in red. Get the current time, calculate it at the end, and print out the result. This method here is what an advice is. Is the actual logic that you want to trigger when a certain event happens in a Java program. The particular event is encapsulated by an invocation object here. So here we're saying that we want to intercept a method call and profile that particular method. So here we can actually print out that method by getting it from the invocation object. So we can say at the end, this particular method took that amount. Whoops. Also, see, one point of this particular advice is invoke that invoke next. What that actually does is finally invokes the actual method that we are wrapping, that we are looking at, that we are doing metrics upon, or it actually might call another event handler that we have applied to our system, another aspect that we've applied to our system. So that's really writing an aspect in JBoss AOP. Next thing you have to do is actually apply the aspect. Applying the aspect in JBoss AOP, you would define an XML file. In this particular example, we say, hey, we have a metrics aspect, and we want to apply that aspect on every single public method of the bank account class. So this is the query language I was talking about, the point cut expression language. It allows you to specify points in your Java program where you can apply an aspect. So that's basically all you have to do. Compile the code. You tell the runtime to load that particular XML file when your Java program starts up, and that particular aspect will be applied to the methods. So that's really a nutshell where our aspect-oriented framework does. I didn't want to go into too much detail because this is about aspect-oriented middleware, but to be able to talk about some of the middleware stuff we've done, I wanted to give an overview of it. How would you turn off an aspect? There's two different ways you can do that. JBoss AOP can run inside an application server, and JBoss's application server, or it can run standard. If you're running a JBoss application server, you would just remove the XML file from JBoss's deploy directory, and the aspects would be removed. So for instance, at runtime, you could be running an application, you can turn on the metrics code and turn it off.
You don't have to recompile?
You do not have to recompile. One thing you do have to do is to enable this, I'm getting into too much details, but either you have to prepare your objects, which does a pre-compile step that says these points in my Java program can have aspects applied to them, or if you're running within the JBoss application server, you can just recycle the class loader that particular class lives in to reload new aspects or remove aspects.
But does it modify the class bytecodes at runtime in order to
Yes, it can. JBoss AOP supports both load time and compile time with bytecode weaving for its aspects. I'll quickly go through the features, then we can jump into the middleware part. The basic features of the framework, we support interception for fields, constructors, and methods. You can do interception on the caller side as well. We support control flows, introduction and mixing classes. Again, load time or compile time, aspect weaving. It's 100% pure Java. It's not an extension to the Java language. And it's available integrated with the application server, or it can run standalone in any Java program as well. Some of its distinguishing features: we'll see the dynamic API later on. We have a bunch of dynamic aspects that use our dynamic API. Allows you to apply aspects on a per instance basis. Our AOP framework supports HAP deployment both in our application server as well as in standalone mode if you're running outside of the JBoss application server. We have a metadata facility and an annotation compiler. So if you want to do JSR 175 annotations, you can do that with JBoss AOP. And we have a runtime GUI management console. It's sort of boring with all those details. So let's start diving into JBoss's prepackaged middleware aspects. If you think about it, middleware by nature is cross-cutting. It's functionality that you want to snap on to an existing object model rather than expose within application code. When you're writing application code and you're writing business logic, you don't want things like transactions and security and persistence and that sort of stuff to pollute your application code base. So middleware by definition is aspect related. AOP and middleware fit like glue. If you think about the Gang of Four Design Patterns book, if you've read that book, you would notice that all the examples are GUI examples. My bet is that when you get a design patterns book on aspect-oriented programming in a year or two, you'll see all the examples will be middleware. For example, Ron Mavas's book has a lot of examples on transaction and security and such. That's because middleware is a perfect application for AOP. It's great about the combination of AOP and middleware is that you can do iterative development much more easily. You can focus on running plain Java objects and later on apply middleware as your iterative process goes on and on. So you can apply security after the fact, and even in a fine-grained way to your object model later on and not have to make those design decisions up front. So let's look at some of the things that JBoss is trying to do. Our aspects come in two separate flavors. One are annotated aspects. Some of the ones I'll be talking about are asynchronous aspect. Some of the J2EE a la carte ones we have, like transaction, demarcation, role-based security. We also have a transactional locking aspect. Annotated aspects work with JDK 1.5 annotations. You'll see that. The other flavor are aspects common are the dynamic flavor. We have a couple of those. One is we have a transactional replicated cache, where you can write plain Java object concern into a cache and transparently and implicitly they become transactional, and you can see some examples on that later. We also have a way to make any plain Java object available at runtime over the network through a variety of different protocols, and you can make plain Java objects be clustered as well. First, let's look at our annotated aspects. Is everybody familiar with annotations in JDK 1.5? Who has not heard of JDK 1.5 annotations? JDK 1.5 has the ability to define metadata as an interface, and then you can apply that metadata to any point in your application. So you can do stuff like this. You can say, this particular method right here is read locked. This particular method is write locked. Basically, you're tagging methods. If you're familiar with xdoclet, it's very much like that. What's great about this, if you combine this with AOP, is that you can basically extend the Java language. Because what JDK 1.5 annotations give you is a type-safe way to define new syntax and apply it to your code. And what AOP can do is trigger behavior based on those tags. So what I'll do is we'll walk through an example of doing that by defining a read-write lock. And then what we'll do is walk through the actual prepackaged annotated aspects that come with JBoss. So first thing you have to do to define a read-write lock aspect that we're doing here is first you have to define a JDK 1.5 annotation. So first we have to define the syntax to our extension to the Java language. It's simply public at interface read lock, public at interface write lock. So what we want to happen is when a method is tagged as read locked, we want to acquire a read lock on the lock monitor of the object. When a method is tagged as write lock, we want to acquire a write lock. Next thing that we would do is define the actual read-write lock aspect. Here we allocate our read-write lock. We define our read lock advice, which acquires a read lock and releases the read lock after the method call. And our write lock will acquire the write lock and release it at the end. Next thing we have to do is define how that particular aspect will be triggered. How will it be applied to a particular thing in your Java runtime? So again, we have to define a point cut expression. Here we're saying all non-static methods that are tagged as read locked, I want to apply the read-write-lock aspect and call the read-lock advice. Any non-static methods that are tagged as write lock, I want to call the write lock. So when we're actually coding our object here, we can say this particular method here, I want it to acquire a read lock on the bank account object, on the bank account class. And this particular method, I want to acquire a write lock. So you can see what we've done here is that we can actually extend the Java language and add new behavior to the Java language in a type-safe way. So this is what we've done with some of our middleware aspects. Any questions? Yeah?
I'm confused. Aren't you cluttering up the code then with these annotations, which is one of
To me, this particular example, yes, but in other examples, no. Let's take one of the prepackaged aspects we have is transaction demarcation. When you're an application developer, you want to know that you're being invoked within a transaction. You want to know the semantics of the that you're within a transaction, so you want tags exposed. So my feeling is that in many cases as a developer, you want to see exactly what's going on. In other cases, you want it to be hidden. You want it to be hidden. It's the same argument if, are you familiar with Xdocket? No? Okay. Well, Xdocket is a lot like these tags, and it generates code for you, for EJB containers and such. People have the same sort of argument. I don't want to see my EJB semantics in my code, and other developers say, hey, I want to see it in my code so I know what's going on. You always have that battle going back and forth. But to me, sometimes there's a right way, there's a right time to use tags and a wrong time. And also depends on your perspective. So some of JBoss's prepackaged annotated aspects. One of them is something we call an asynchronous aspect. Basically what it allows you to do is tag a method as asynchronous and the method will run in the background. So basically what you do is you can tag any method as asynchronous. So in this example, we allocate a plain Java object here. We call one of the tagged method here, and that method will happen in the background, happen asynchronously. Another thing that happens when we tag this method is that the aspect will force any class that has a tagged asynchronous method to implement an asynchronous interface. So, in this particular example, some POJO method is actually returning a value. What we can do is get that response asynchronously. And the way we do that is we typecast the instance of POJO to our asynchronous facade interface. We get an asynchronous response object back from that interface, and we can do things like wait for the response to finish or pull for the actual value. So again, this allows you to tag any method as asynchronous, and you can do a bunch of things in parallel and gather their results back asynchronously, pull their results back. Again, I think asynchronous is another good example of using a tag. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, so you have a polling mechanism, you said, for this? You
can this one's a wait.
Right.
This also poll is done.
Is there like an abort? If, say you wanted it to only go for a certain amount of time and then you want to send an abort if it didn't finish within a given time?
It does not have that. No. It does. You can wait for a certain amount of time. You can say, I want to wait for 10 milliseconds and do that sort of stuff too. Where the invocation won't always happen. Another annotated aspect we have is our transaction demarcation aspect. For those of you familiar with EJB, it's the same sort of thing, except that you can use a tag on any Java method, whether static or a member method, and define transaction boundaries. So you can say, I want this particular method to begin a transaction, and at the end of the method call, I want to commit a rollback of the transaction. You can do it in two ways. Either you can tag a method using an annotation, and you specify the semantics. The semantics are very similar to TJB. Or you can define this metadata in XML. So JBoss AOP gives you, you can additionally, if you do not like tags, you can define this sort of metadata in XML. That's a transaction demarcation. Another one of our aspects is a transactional locking aspect. It's very similar to the read-write lock example I gave before, except that when you call a transactionally locked method, it's going to hold the lock monitor on the object for the duration of the transaction rather than the duration of the method call and release that lock at the end. So you can think of it as an enhanced Java synchronizer. So again, you can apply it with the TX synchronized tag and such. Role-based security. This is another one of our aspects where we can secure access to any method field or constructor. It can be a static method, a static field, so you can really have real fine-grained security. Role-based security is it's basically saying that when this particular method is called, only admins are allowed to access this particular method. And the roles and the authentication for that particular method is handled by JBoss security services, which come with our applications. So you can either define you can define an XML in the deployment script that looks a lot like EJP, except it's extended.